Once upon a time, there was a man. He was standing where you're standing now.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and sitting in my tiny West Town apartment with me is Sonia Glissick.
Hi!
There you go. She's very happy to be here. At least I hope she's
happy
to be here.
I'm really excited.
And I met her at the Hungry Brain a few weeks back for the homeroom presentation with Jay Ryan and Paul. I can't pronounce his last name. He's a great graphic artist. Go buy his stuff. What's his last name?
Hornschmeier?
Hornschmeier. It's very,
something like that.
It's a very, very German last name.
Yeah.
And he's from Ohio.
Yeah.
And so it's Paul H.
Paul H.
That's how I met him, and and I met you that night, and you gave me your business card because I'm interested in screen printing, and you are a screen printer, so I went to your website, and her stuff is amazing.
Thank you.
That's why I invited you on this show. So, how did you get involved in screen printing?
Well, I decided that I really wanted to learn how to screen print, so I was wondering how do I go about that, and I Googled screen printing in Chicago, mm-hmm. and one of the first places that popped up was Sputnik Press, I went and checked it out, and I met Angie Leonard, who runs the space.
Okay.
And at the time, this was in 2008, she was running the space from her loft apartment, so everything, you know, she was living there, and the press was there, and it had such a wonderful community feel to it, and I really loved it, so I decided to take the intro class.
So what exactly is Sputnik Press?
Sputnik Press is a community print studio. We offer screen printing facilities as well as etching, lithography, relief, or if you're interested in, you know, printing on textiles or just having a show, artist residencies, things like that. It's open to everyone in the community.
Do you think you would have gotten involved in screen printing if you weren't in a place like Sputnik?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I would have found a way because I was really interested in taking up screen printing.
Why were you interested in starting that?
Well, at the time, I was really inspired by some of the work of screen printers that I was finding online.
Give me some names. If you remember any.
Yeah, it was sort of like, I was just looking through gig posters, actually, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. So many of these are screen printed, mm-hmm. and how do you do that, and how does one get involved with that? So I decided to give it a try.
So you've been doing it a little over 2 years now? Or about
yeah,
2 years
about,
now?
About two years, yeah.
And you kind of like it, you like it, you're glad you're doing it somewhat?
Yeah, I love it.
There you
I
go.
Love it.
You started out as an illustrator, or an illustration major.
That's right.
Okay, you went to college for illustration. Why would anyone go to college for illustration and not any other type of art form? What about illustration drew you to it?
Okay, so this is a question that comes up a lot. I went to college for illustration because I've always loved to draw, and I've always been interested in art, and illustration at the time seemed like a really good way to blend drawing with a way to make money.
Okay.
A way to succeed.
Do you think that's actually come to fruition? Is it a good way to make money?
No, I think the illustration, well, I mean, I'm trying to make it a good way to make money, but I really think the illustration is, it's very, very competitive, and it's also a field that's...
Wait. You said illustration is very a competitive field.
Yeah.
How is it a competitive field? I don't think a lot of people would consider illustration a competitive field.
It is. There are many illustrators trying to make it in the field, and...
What's like the dream job?
The dream job is that you're working for different magazines, you're working for album covers, you're doing... You kind of have to have your hands in many different pies.
Okay.
If one were to make that analogy. And you sort of have an established voice, an established style that is recognizable, and
how do you have an agent? Do a lot of these people?
No, I mean, a lot of people do have agents.
Okay.
Eventually.
Do you need one to be successful?
I think at the start it's a really good idea to just try and do it yourself and see how you can do it, and then get an agent later.
But you're saying that in order to be a successful illustrator, you probably need to have, like, do art shows, I'm assuming?
Yeah, you kind of, you know, you just become part of the community, and you take up projects that you enjoy doing, and you sort of, a lot of things count for illustration that you wouldn't really think of. Like, for example, like, comics can be mm-hmm. in a series of illustration, and it's all sort of tied in with art, and it's all sort of the same thing in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, illustrators have art shows, and, artists do illustration projects and things like that. So it's really just finding your niche is what it's about.
How is screen printing compared to illustration? What do you find more satisfaction in?
Okay.
I should stop ending questions in prepositions. It's awful. Sorry about that.
Actually, I find that they're really tied in together. I mean, if you think about it, posters are a way of illustration.
Uh-huh.
You're presented with a client, and you're making an image for them mm-hmm. that you tie. You know, it's a visual communication,
yeah.
which is what illustration is. So, screen printing and posters and illustration and art, all of that goes really well together, and that's why I love it so much.
If you know that it's going to be, a project that you're working on is going to be screen printed, do you approach it differently? Do you use a limited amount of colors? Does it matter?
Yeah, I definitely approach it differently than if I were to watercolor something. Because screen printing, you have to have in mind the amount of colors you are going to use, what colors and how you will mix them or mm-hmm. Overlay them. And usually I do the color separation in Photoshop. So with something like screen printing, I would take a black and white image, take that into Photoshop, and then edit different, add different layers and edit different layers. Whereas, like, if I was just drawing something or illustrating something, I can watercolor it, I'll digitally color mm-hmm. it however many different ways I wanted to.
So when you say you start with a black and white image, is that a black and white image that you make, or is it something that the client gives to you?
I draw it, yeah.
Okay,
that's what I do.
So the first thing you do, regardless of if it's going to be screen printed or if it's just an image, is you draw it out black and white?
Yeah, first I draw it in pencil, and then okay. I draw it, I ink it using a quill pen and ink, black ink.
Usually. So you, like, literally dip the pen?
I dip the pen.
You really do?
I really do.
And then you put it in Photoshop, so you're using, like, the newest possible technology and the oldest possible technology.
That's right, yes.
Okay. And, like, this is what you want to do?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just asking. No, I love screen posters. They're all over my apartment, but I have no desire to literally dip the pen into the quill.
Uh-huh.
Quill pen. Good. See, I've been yeah. drinking way too much coffee.
Me too.
This is awful. I need to drink more alcohol and less coffee.
We're both highly caffeinated right now.
Wired right now. It's 9 p.m. on a, was it Tuesday? Wednesday?
It's a Wednesday.
Jesus Christ. Anyways, okay. Back to you.
Yes.
This process, do you find this difficult, or is this just, like, second nature to you?
Which process?
The screen printing process.
Oh, okay, yeah, I found it difficult at first because I had never done it before, and it was, there's a lot of different steps involved,
mm-hmm.
but the more that you do it, like, anything becomes natural, mm-hmm. and right now, I'm much, much faster than when I started, so.
When you start a piece, do you just draw, like a lot of writers write, you just, whatever pops in your head, you draw it out and sketch it out, and that becomes your sketchbook? Or do you always have an idea of what you're going to draw before you draw it?
Usually I do a bunch of thumbs, like little, thumbs are like little tiny sketches.
Okay.
I don't sit there and draw an 8.5 page 11, for every yeah. single idea. And then, it's sort of a way of purging out ideas and constructing them.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually something will come up, that I'm like, aha, that's going to work or that's not going to work and I need to move it in a different direction. And then, I find, this image that kind of works and then I begin further sketching that out and further sort of evolving it towards the final image.
And then who picks that, the final image? Do you pick it out? Like, I'm going to go on this or does the client pick it out?
Oh, well, okay. So I choose the images that, the sketches, for example, that I think would work, convey the idea well, or mm-hmm. like would work well for the project. And usually I do about 3 different comps
okay.
that I then send to the client. And then the client writes back and says, I like this, or this isn't working, can you add this? And then I change it, or, talk them out of it if it's a really bad idea. Things like that.
So how many hours do you think go into making one screen printed poster?
Oh God, I've never really thought about it because it's probably so many.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot.
And so it's not something I like to think about. But these hours kind of tend to just take over and you don't really think about the hours.
Yeah.
You're just enjoying it so much.
So you're obviously happy that you went to college for illustration.
Yeah, I probably would have been happier if I went to a more art school. But
where did you go?
University of Arizona.
Okay, and that's not known as an art school. Isn't it known
no.
as a party school? I'm asking. I'm not
accusing. ASU, you're confusing us with Arizona
State. Oh, I'm sorry.
State.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right. That's
we're not the party school.
You're not the party school. But you're from Arizona, kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. And now you live in Chicago for 2.5 years?
That's right.
How do you like Chicago?
I like it, actually. I really enjoy living in a bigger city. And, there's so much to do, there's so much going on, so many events, whereas in Tucson it was, you know, just one little tiny area that's the downtown. And but that's okay too, you know. I mean,
oh, of course, of course. But you mentioned that for screen printing, in general for art, you need to be part of the community.
Right.
But we never clarified that if it's a physical community or if it's an online community. When you say community, what does that actually mean? And next question, it would be, would you be able to do screen printing in Tucson the same way you're doing it in Chicago?
When I was in Tucson, I wasn't looking into screen printing, mm-hmm. so I don't know what kind of screen printing, actual physical community there is, mm-hmm. if there are even facilities for it, and I'm sure there are. I guess when I talk about communities, I mean, there's two different kinds. There's the community that's like, you know, you're surrounded by the people that are interested in what you're doing, and you're all interested in the same thing, so you're kind of participating in it physically. And then there is the sort of more global universal community, you know, which you're part of as part of your craft.
Okay.
And you can, you know, unite on that, you know, online or, you know, via different, you know, mm-hmm. this radio broadcast is great, you know, things like that.
Okay. Are you glad that you're doing that here in Chicago because it's fucking cold?
I am glad I'm doing it here in Chicago because Chicago's got an amazing screen printing community and amazing poster artists living here.
Do you think that has more to do with the artists or the bands, or just anytime you put this amount of people anywhere, it's going to be like that?
I don't know what it is about Chicago, but there is definitely, like, the music scene and the screen printing scene are huge.
Who do you like musically? Do you like anybody? You don't got a lot.
Oh.
I just popped that question
off the top of my head. God, I don't know.
There's that many bands that you love.
There actually are. Yeah, I love a lot of different kinds of music.
Well, you just got a gig doing posters for Mo.
Yes.
Who's not a small band.
No, we were talking about how we don't really know where they're from, but
they came to you.
Yeah.
And did you ever think that something like that would happen? I mean, I don't know if it's paying the bills, but I mean, that's a pretty big band and a lot of people are going to see your art.
Yeah.
Is that weird?
No, it was great.
Did you even think about that?
It was fantastic. It took me a little bit surprised just because I hadn't, I haven't approached that many people yet. Mm-hmm. So when they contacted me, I was a little bit taken aback, and I was actually quite busy because I was participating in a show at Sputnik, mm-hmm. With another artist, Misha Keegan. So I was making a lot of work for that. And, but I was really, really excited because the sort of work that she wanted me to do was a lot of technical sort of detail line work, sort of a little bit dark, a little bit creepy, whimsical, which is exactly the kind of niche that I'm interested in, the kind of work that I do. And so I was really excited about the poster, and it was for their 2009 show in Albany in New York. So it was such a great thing. I really, really would love to do more gig posters.
Do you find it's different that when you're doing a gig poster versus, like you said, you had a show coming up, mm-hmm. or you had a show? I mean, when you have a set deadline, is it easier to work or harder to work, or does it matter?
Deadlines are great. Because
you like deadlines.
Yes, because you actually make the work.
Okay.
You make yourself make the work. When you don't have deadlines, you put it off. Or at least I do.
The stuff that's on your website, it's a lot of stuff that isn't gig posters.
Mm-hmm.
And those are usually for shows, or that's just stuff that like you actually want to make for just to make?
Both. Like, okay. I did some of the stuff that I have on there I had at the Sputnik Press show. And some of the stuff I did just on the side for myself.
Yeah.
While I, you know, I make the images and then I experiment with the screen printing.
How would you describe your style? I know that's a very vague question, but I mean.
Okay, so my style, I would say, is got a certain sort of. Oh, I'm not sure. kind of a fantastical, darker feel to it. It's got sort of like.
I think I can make it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
If you like the bands that are on Merge Records and you like those album covers, you'll probably like her art. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
Arcade Fire, Neutral Milk Hotel.
Okay, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here, hold on. You keep talking for a second. I'm going to pull up for the people that haven't been in my apartment. We do this in the room where I keep the records, and I'm trying to find the record that reminds me of her stuff, and it's this one.
Oh, I love that image, and I have that image.
I just showed. I don't have the Airplane Over the Sea album, but yeah. it's very whimsical and stuff like that. But yours has a lot more like cool monsters and octopus and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm interested in like sort of merging the fantasy and you know the real world, and then I also really like old fashioned stuff, like Victorian stuff.
Why is that though? I mean, there's a lot of like screen posters. It seems to be a very popular theme. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure if it's a recent thing or if that's just what it... Like, for example, that cover
yeah.
right there.
That's like a 12-year-old album. There's a poster at the Brain that's like 15 years old. It's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, kind of like a ghastly sort of look. I think a huge part of that has to do with, like, as image makers, we're interested in visual culture and the history of visual culture.
Okay.
So we, like, tend to look back on these photographs, old images that have sort of... They're not contemporary, so they're not close to us. They're sort of mm-hmm. removed, and we feel like we can take these images and reinterpret them how we want without feeling so close to it as we do to, like, say, a photograph of a friend or something like that.
Okay.
So, and there's also a certain sort of mystery to it, a certain sort of magic to it when it's an older, spookier sort of image, or like
okay.
you know, for me anyway, a lot of artists do work with like. Modern geometric
yeah.
stuff, and that's cool too.
Are you trying to tell a story when you're doing these things, or is it just like, this looks cool, the end?
No, I think there's meaning to everything.
Okay.
So I think whether we realize it or not, there is meaning in what we do.
Well, you're the artist, you tell me. When you're making these uh-huh. posters, there's a meaning behind them.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, there's always going to be a meaning or a story or something.
Okay.
For me anyway, there's always like some kind of a story that something that draws me to wanting to draw it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that draw you to want to draw these things?
Do you have something in mind, like any particular?
No, I don't. I mean, what's the impetus? I mean, the reason why I do the podcast is because I want to find out what people are passionate about. So that's
uh-huh.
my impetus for doing that. And then in terms of like, I made a film, the reason why I made the film is because I felt like I had to.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you have to, or do you feel like I have this idea, I wonder how this would look? Is it more of an explorer thing, or is it more of a, I have to do this because, and I don't know why?
It's kind of like that.
Okay.
It's kind of like I have to draw, and I feel like it's, I don't know, it's very natural to me, and I've always drawn, so it's an extension of my arm, really.
When do you think you began drawing? Is it like your earliest memories, or like was there a certain moment like, this is the time I have to draw? Like you
No, it was like really early on,
okay.
like 4 or 5.
You were 4 or 5 and
yeah.
you were always drawing. So you always
yeah.
wanted to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
How were your grades in school?
I've always been like straight A, 4.0
really?
Nerd. Yes. GPA.
You've always been a very, very smart...
yeah.
What did all your like teachers and professors think of you going to do to be an illustrator? Were they disappointed?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think I had... I was doing in high school, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I was doing a lot of art stuff. Like, I was in art club, and I painted, like, 2 murals, and I was always doing, like, participating in art stuff, so it was just kind of natural for me to, like, go off and do, like, something creative,
mm-hmm.
whatever that might have meant in
okay.
high school.
So you always had to do stuff like this?
Yeah, I always have it in mind.
Okay. This is kind of completely off topic here, but I can't think of a segue to get to the next topic, and that's backpacking for 4 months across, like, Europe and Asia.
Yeah.
And you said that it's actually not that expensive.
No. It's not. It's like, if you're willing, whatever you're willing to put up with, you know? I mean, if you want to, like, set up at a Ritz hotel every night.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's going to get expensive.
But this is another question I asked you. If you said you could stay for 3 nights, or for $3 a night in certain places, and I asked you, if you were
yeah.
alone, would you have spent $3 a night? No.
Yeah, well, okay, I take that back, because I think it depends what part, like, when we were in India, for example,
uh-huh.
what part of India? Because, like, in the north, when we were in the north, we were in this area called Sikkim.
Okay.
Which kind of is sort of, it's a really, really gorgeous area. And if you ever wanted to, like, go to Tibet but don't want to spend, you know, go through all the regulations
mm-hmm.
of going to Tibet, you could just go to Sikkim, which borders Nepal and Tibet and all these
okay.
areas. And It's very, very safe and beautiful there, and extremely cheap to really? Stay and eat. You could stay for $2 a night in a room, and you could, you know, have a meal for 50 cents. And it's I would definitely stay there by myself for...
Okay, so where did you go?
Oh, God. Okay, we went all over the place. We went to... It was sort of a haphazard journey because we had many different reasons to go to different places. Well, we had to go to Sweden.
You had to go to Sweden.
We had to go to Sweden.
I don't think anyone's ever complained about having to go to Sweden, at least the people I know.
My grandfather, he lives in Sweden, and so we wanted to... I wanted to go visit him because my mom was going.
Okay.
And so she... you know, we met up there with her, and we stayed with my grandfather for 3 weeks. So that wasn't very, like, really part of the backpacking.
Nice.
But it was beautiful because he lives in this tiny little village by a lake, and it was very gorgeous and glorious. And but before that, Brooke and I decided that since we're going to Sweden, we might as well go to Norway since it's right next door. So we decided to go on this 5-day trek through the Norwegian lands. It was called the Harndager. Oh, I don't remember now. But the Hardanger Plateau or something.
Okay.
And this was really spontaneous of us because we decided that we're going to just... This is a crazy long story.
I'm a booger.
Okay. So we decided that we're going to, look up some directions online.
Okay.
Basically Google how to hike through this plateau.
So you didn't have a guide?
No. It was just the two of us. We flew into the airport at Oslo, we decided... Okay, so before we left, we decided to buy some...
before you left America or before you left Sweden?
Before we left for the trip in America. We decided we're going to, like, stock up on some supplies for this hike because food is very expensive in Norway. So
I didn't know that.
It is. It's
really
ridiculously expensive. Norway is so expensive.
Why is that? Just because it's hard to get stuff there? Like, in terms of transportation?
I think they just have a lot of oil, and they're a really rich country. So everyone who lives there can afford it.
Oh,
but people
really?
Visiting can't afford it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
Yes. No, this is a good point. So we decided to buy some... we got some freezer-dried foods at REI, and some, like, you know, necessities, like the tent and stuff like that. So now I should mention that it's... when we arrived in Norway, it was 2 weeks after the off-season.
Okay.
In the off-season for hiking. During the on-season for hiking, you can walk from cabin to cabin, check in, you know, relax, sleep, eat there, and then move on and hike the next leg to the next cabin. So we knew that when we were leaving, we were going to go, that all the cabins were going to be in the off-season.
Okay.
So there, no one's going to be there, and it's going to be completely, like, locked. And so we brought a tent.
Okay.
And the first 2 days were, like, gorgeous and beautiful and sunny and amazing, and we were just alone and for hundreds of miles. There was nobody around.
Yeah.
Complete and utter silence.
Before you move on, do you have any first aid experience?
No.
Great. Continue.
Yeah, and we also had one glove.
Wait, how do you have a glove? Was this intentional?
One glove each. No, this is what happened. I decided to wait to buy my gloves because I forgot to bring some when we got to Norway.
Okay.
Okay. Before this, we were in Amsterdam for just like a short while.
Okay.
And Brooke got this like really huge... They didn't have small gloves in Amsterdam. They had these huge fleece ones, and I didn't want to wear huge fleece ones, so I decided to wait till Norway.
Okay.
When we got to Norway, it was $40 for a pair of gloves. So I decided that, like, I'm not going to buy these gloves here. I'm not going to need them. We also brought a tiny little stove from America that needed a gas hookup.
And you did not have the gas hookup?
And when we got to Norway, there was, in this town that we were expecting to buy the gas hookup, was actually just a hotel. And it was the whole town. It was just a hotel.
Yeah.
And they only had the screw-on kind. So, yeah, we didn't have hot water either.
Okay, so you have a glove.
Each, yeah.
You're on the second day in Norway.
Yeah.
What happens?
We also realized that the map that we bought was way more correct than the map online. We're not going to make the whole entire 7-day trek that we were planning on doing. We're going to have to cut through over a region that we didn't read about.
Okay.
And cut it to 5 days.
Okay.
So it was, like, extremely strenuous. And,
yes.
And both of us weren't, like, in great shape. But we were just doing it. And we were hiking, and it was amazing. And then by the fourth day, we got to this hill. And it started to get higher and higher. and higher, and it was like already cloudy and foggy, and we started to see like glaciers far away. And we were like, oh God. And it was getting colder and colder, and that glove was just not doing it.
No.
And then we got to this high point with all the lakes.
Yeah.
Like all the lakes, and it was absolutely gorgeous, like absolutely fantastic. So beautiful. But then the rain started to fall, and it just started gushing at us like almost horizontal pressure. And in like minutes, I was completely drenched, completely, utterly drenched to the core, freezing. And this continued for like the next 8 hours. Slippery rocks, rain, hail, absolute nightmare. I really thought we were going to die.
It sounds like it.
I was crying. But you couldn't see the tears because there was so much rain.
Yes.
And I was just... It was one of those moments in life when you're just like, this is it. I'm going to go. And I'm going to die here. And nobody knows where I am. And like, nobody can find us. Nobody will find us till like spring. And it was also one of those moments where I was just like, I can do it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and you
yeah.
realize like how much a human being is capable of.
This sounds very inspirational.
Thanks. Yeah, it was at the time I thought I was going to die, but it is. Yeah, it was also very like, let's go, we can do this. So we kept walking, and then everything started. We decided that when we reached this cabin, finally, we're going to just break in. We're just going to break the glass, and we're just going to break in because the storm was that bad. But then, and everything started, and everything looked like a cabin. There was huge boulders that we would get to, and we're just like. We thought it was a cabin we'd get to, and it was just a boulder. And then finally, we saw in the distance this tiny little puff of smoke. And we were like, what is that? And we kept walking, and there was a person. There was a person walking around out of this cabin in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of winter. And it was just the most amazing. Like it was like we had been shipwrecked, and somebody came and saved us, and we just started running across these rocks, like running towards this person in a red jacket. And she was carrying a bunch of logs inside, and we were just like, hi! She was so confused because she's Norwegian, and she just was like, whoa, Americans,
yeah.
What are you doing here? And so we got inside, and it happened to be these two nurses, actually.
Oh, that's very convenient.
I know! This is like the guiding angel, and they just they helped us like keep us warm, and you know, brought us coffee, and it was just the most. I couldn't have prayed for more.
Yeah.
And we just stayed up all night talking with them because it was, and we learned so much about them and exchanged all these stories.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. That's just one tiny little story of this trip.
God, that's great. So you almost die in Norway. You were in Sweden. You were in Amsterdam for a few days.
Yeah.
Where else did you go?
Then we went to India for 2 months after Sweden.
2 months in India?
Yeah.
That's a long time in India.
Yeah. We were... Brooke's friend... Brooke is my boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
His friend, who is Indian, and she's originally from India, was getting married.
Okay. And she was getting married in the northern part?
She was getting... It's sort of in central India.
Okay.
So we arrived kind of centrally and made our way sort of looped around.
North
to south, back to central. And 2 months in India is really not very much.
Really?
If I were to go back, I would go for at least 6 months.
So you liked it a lot?
I loved it.
Okay.
I loved India, and I think about it almost every day. I just really miss it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so she was getting married, and so we wanted to attend the wedding. And
that's very nice
yeah.
of you. Four months. That's crazy to me.
It's not even that much, though, because we met all these people from Australia and England and, like, hardly any Americans travel. And
there's
everyone
a reason.
And Australians are just like, 4 months, that's nothing, mate. We're like, we're going for a year.
Don't Australians have like 2 or 3 months of vacation time?
Yeah, they also all travel for at least a year after they graduate from
college.
That's
why.
It's like part of the culture.
And that's why I'm number one. Sorry. You're not from here either. Can we talk about that just really shortly?
Sure.
Where are you from?
Bosnia.
That's crazy. God, I feel so uncultured. And, and like, you were saying, like, I almost died. The only time I've ever felt like I might die is, like, riding the L at certain hours.
Yeah, I always think I might die riding the L.
Well, thank you for doing this. We are going to close with a question from the Kids Book of Questions by Gregory Stock, PhD. It's an awful book.
Okay.
So you need to pick a number between 1 and 260.
Ooh, how about 196?
196.
I don't know why.
Why not? That's why.
Yeah, why not?
If for one day you could do absolutely anything you wanted and not get caught or punished, what would you do?
Okay, let me think about this for just a minute.
You got all the time in the world to think about it.
If I could for one day.
One day. No one will ever know, but you would know.
Just do anything.
Do anything you want.
So
you're essentially invisible.
Right. Okay.
Essentially.
Essentially.
You can't, like, force anybody to do anything they want, though. If you think about it, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
You can't be like, you can't rob... Well, you could rob people.
You could rob people.
But you would know that you robbed them, and you wouldn't get caught, but they would know that you robbed them. Does that make sense?
They would know that they've been robbed, but they wouldn't know by who?
They wouldn't be able to identify you.
Uh-huh, I see.
So you have a conscience.
Right.
Like, this... like, but, I mean, if you don't have a conscience in real life, go nuts.
Yeah.
So anything you want for a day, what would you do?
You know, I would probably just... hop on a really expensive flight somewhere.
Okay.
And, like, just go somewhere to some, I don't know, amazing beach place in Hawaii and, like, spend a lot of money.
You could do that now, actually.
Yeah,
see,
probably.
That's the thing. That's the thing. No one ever... See, my problem is I go instantly to murder.
To murder?
I'm instantly murdering
people. I don't have anybody
people.
I want to murder.
Just think about... Okay, fine. Jails are full of people that can't be rehabilitated for obvious reasons, like rapists.
Right.
I fucking kill all the rapists. I win. Like, and like, that makes me sound like a crazy person. I don't care. And then you know what I'm doing? I'm taking all the money. Fuck it. I'm the richest shit ever.
Yeah, you know, it probably would involve me stealing a lot of money
it's
at some point.
It's just a murder money spree.
Yeah.
Isn't that awful?
It was basically a money spree.
No, see, yours is... No, mine's also a huge part of murder.
Yeah.
Murder is a huge part of mine.
Yeah.
That should be that should not be a goal.
But that would stay with your conscience.
I'd feel great about it. I'm not just murdering randomly. No, that's crazy.
Murdering all the rapists.
Yeah, what's wrong? Name me one time that's ever a bad thing.
I can't.
Doesn't exist.
No.
Because you're never thinking like, yep, that rapist was going to do awesome shit.
Yeah.
Nope, think about it like that. We should plug your stuff because you are... it sounds so weird saying you're for hire, but you do... it's her art is really, really amazing. You should check it out. Even
Thank
if you're
you.
Broke like me, go to her website. Is it just your name.com?
Yeah, sanyaglisic.com.
SanyaGlisic.com. And you really don't need me to spell that to you because if you're looking on the iPod or on the computer, you can see her name. Do that.com. It's beautiful stuff.
Thank you so much.
I don't think it's crazy rates. And you don't just screen print, you also illustrate.
That's right.
So there's a reason to do that. Help support her traveling habits. And thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you.
We're going to close with Daniel Knox, who is a favorite of mine. This Monday night at the Hungry Brain, there's the I Ching Quartet and the Blind Anabaptist Blues Band. They will be playing. It is, like always, a free show, donation requested. The week after that is a variety night brought to you by the Accountants of Homeland Security. The week after that, please, please, please come out. We're doing another live podcast recording. It'll be our second. And right now we have guests Adam Burke, journalist Jackie Ryan, and music from Al Scorch. We might add one or two more. It's going to be a fun night. Thanks for listening. Go to the other website, youmeetthemeverybody.com. I've been talking too much. Go to Sonia's website and have a wonderful evening.
Once upon a time, there was a man. He was standing where you're standing now. But no one's heard from him. And once upon a time, there was a girl. But a girl has other ways to pay. Are you a married man? When you owe me, you owe me. You don't want to know me. I say hi to your friends. See how far the finger bends. Once upon a time, there was a boy. Said things a boy should never say. I crushed his skull and teeth and broke his neck. And once upon a time there was a corpse. Hard to say if it was boy or girl. From what was left behind. When you owe me, you owe me. Into your If you were late to church, God may forgive you, but the devil will follow you home and crawl in bed with you. And if you were late for me, I'd take an axe to everything.